This is the Live Feed. It's your connection to live music and entertainment in Winona. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
This week on the Live Feed, we feature Corpse Reviver and their set at Boats and Bluegrass 2012. Corpse Reviver is a collaborative group of bluegrass players paying tribute to the Harry Smith anthology of folk music. They come from different music projects, but they've come together to create a folk bluegrass experience like none other. Here's Terry Tenseth, and you're listening to The Live Feed.
All right. I am with Corpse Reviver at Boats and Bluegrass 2012, and they are about to play a set over at the Tallgrass tent. And it's Friday, early evening, afternoon maybe, right? Yeah, it's gorgeous weather. Yeah. Can't beat it with a stick. Can I have you each introduce yourselves?
My name is Mikkel Beckman. I play percussion.
My name is Jillian Ray. I play fiddle and I sing.
Adam Kiesling. I play guitar and banjo.
Why are you called Corpse Reviver?
Corpse Reviver is a tribute band to the Harry Smith Anthology of American Folk Music, which was released in 1952 and features folk songs recorded between 1927 and 1933. And it was instrumental in launching the folk movement and people like the Beatles and Bob Dylan and folks like that you may have heard of. So we're a tribute band to the old tunes. So that's why we're called Corpse Reviver. We're raising the songs of our ancestors back up. Anyway, we all play with different bands. Adam plays with Pertnir Sandstone, who are headlining tonight. Jillian and I are in the Brass Kings, and she has her own band, the Jillian Ray Band. But this is like a labor of love for us. We play the first and third Sundays every month at the 331 Club in Minneapolis and just play the old folk songs under the name Corpse Reviver, just because we love to. Thank you.
Now, how did each of you get involved with music, and then why bluegrass?
Charlie Parr bought me my first washboard about 12 years ago, and I started playing out with him and ended up playing with the Crush Collision Trio and the Brass Kings and lots of other fine folk around. And so grew up in a musical family, and so it's always been a part of my life, I guess. But
was there an instrument before the washboard?
No.
Okay, so just 12 years ago.
I was always one of those annoying guys who banged on the dashboard along to the music.
People be like, stop that, stop that, please stop that. What about for you?
I've just been playing since I was a little kid, playing violin. I went to school for music, where I did a lot of classical for a number of years, and I just kind of started playing with bands when I moved to Duluth in around 2007-ish. So ever since I hit the bluegrass kind of folk country niche, I've never really been able to leave. I love the music so much.
Were you Suzuki trained, or was...
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I currently teach Suzuki lessons, too. It's a good thing, but it's really nice to branch out and just figure out which musical genres you love.
And how about for you?
I kind of grew up in a brass-playing family, and then started playing bass when I was a freshman in high school, and it's kind of been all downhill since then.
So why bluegrass, though?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily play bluegrass. I like the older music that bluegrass is kind of based on. And so it's actually Mickle's fault and Charlie Parr's fault. I was playing in a jug band on the West Bank in the late 90s, and those guys would come down and horn in on our gig. And then, like, Charlie Parr said, you really need to pick this up, the Anthology of American Folk Music. So I did, and it's basically Charlie Parr's fault.
I hear this a lot, that he has a hand in a lot of musicians' influences. Yeah. Now, you guys say you're playing covers of traditional songs, but you, I know you got to have originals, too, that you bang out.
Not with this group. We really are trying to honor those old songs that have been around. In some cases, you know, we play some songs that date back to the 1500s in Scotland, or, you know, songs. This country is so interesting because people brought their music with them and then collided with each other. People from Africa, from different countries in Europe, from all over the world, came together into our cities and collided and made a new art form. And we're really just trying to honor that. So we do really try to stick to the old songs that are in our bones, really, all of us as Americans. If we want to call ourselves Americans, this music is in our bones. We're born with it. So
is it special to you in that way, or how is it different for you?
Oh man, I guess it's different to me because it's so stripped down and simplistic, and you can really tell where now music of now is influenced by this stuff from the Anthology. And really, I've been listening to, you know, music old and new my whole life, but I was never really turned on to the Anthology until, you know, Mickle introduced it to me, what, about four-ish, five-ish years ago? So I'm kind of the novice of the group for sure as far as the style goes. But I think the simplicity of it is what makes it beautiful, and that's where you as an artist can build onto it and make it your own a little bit.
Yeah, we're not retro. We really take the songs and make them our own. So we do, for example, a version of Wagoner's Lad that you would not recognize from the Anthology, but it's our own form of that, and of songs. So this music you can take and make into your own thing and really run with it, and that's okay.
What about for you?
I really like the old records. I mean, the old 78s, and that's probably the bulk of what I listen to are things that were recorded pre-1930, all sorts of different styles of music, and old-time string band, old-time Cajun, old blues. Part of it is, I think a lot of that stuff was recorded, and the idea of being able to sell a recording to somebody was in its infancy, and so these record companies had no idea what would really stick in terms of selling to the public. I mean, one of the first over 100,000 sellers was a scratchy old fiddler named John Carson, you know, recorded a song called Old Hen Cackle. And so I really like kind of that free-for-all mentality of the late 20s, where it's just like they'd record anything and everything if somebody could keep it together to be able to sit and record for 3 minutes. You know, there was a likelihood that it would get released. And so I kind of like that. There were a lot of polished bands, but there's a lot of bands that weren't so polished, and I think those are the ones that really interest me, you know. So it's kind of like that, you just never see that anymore, you know. So That kind of thing, I guess, if that makes any sense at all.
Well, I noticed that people back then would record just spoken word things, too, and then have it pressed as well. So it's kind of interesting how it's kind of like documenting history instead of just for music or entertainment purposes.
It wasn't a band that looked good. It wasn't a band that necessarily sounded good. It was like they'd go into Bristol, Tennessee, and they'd put ads in the paper, and people would come from 100 miles around. These old family bands have been playing this music for, you know, two or three generations post-Civil War, and it's what stuck. A lot of preachers back in those days would record their sermons on 78 and sell those, and those are fascinating to listen to, just to kind of catch the cadence of how somebody spoke 100 years ago. You know, we wouldn't have any idea of what that would sound like nowadays.
And the genres were not split and separated. You know, you've got, there's recordings, early recordings where Jimmy Rogers, for example, who's, they call him the father of country music, is recording with blues artists and other people. And so people just got together and shared what they knew and made beautiful things happen. So, you know, it was before the compartmentalization of music, before the marketing of music, and it was raw and wide open. And it's very exciting to us as a band that we can go back to that and reintroduce that to people. And in a lot of ways, there's so many genres or veins of the music in the bluegrass scene now where there's cross-pollination. You see it in the punk rock movement. You see it in different movements or strains where people are, I think, striving to return to that, you know, but not in a way that's retro or conservative. This is liberating in a way because you can take this stuff and run with it down the road and create new sounds out of it, which is very exciting to us because we're forward-looking as a band and we want to move forward and not just be stuck back in some pocket retro conservative movement where you have to play a chord a certain way, or, you know, because one of the Monroe Brothers did it this way, we all, that's the gospel truth, you know. Yeah. that's crap, you know. It's like, just, you know, we don't care about that. We want to take it and make it our own and move forward with it in a progressive way.
Free from care, I'll leave this world of toil and trouble.
You had mentioned that folk had been, what is it, banned, you were saying, to the MC, and that people got rid of vinyl, you were mentioning beforehand?
Oh, no, it was more the old 78s were made out of pressed shellac.
Oh, that's right.
And in World War II, they were recycling old records, you know, so a lot of records got destroyed for the war movement, you know, plus people that bought them just didn't take good care of them, and so they became quite rare, or a lot of them became quite rare. You know, there's some artists on there, like a guy named Charlie Patton was a Mississippi blues artist, has a song on there, and his records are now going, you know, upwards of $3,000 to $15,000, depending on scarcity. So it's just kind of...
Yeah, people forgot their roots, and especially after World War II and this push to be modern and bury your past and your traditions and the part of who you were as whatever ethnic group you were from in this country, and there was a move towards conformity, and it was these wild, crazy folks like Harry Smith who collected and hoarded these records and said, you know what, let's not forget some of this important stuff from who we were. And here's this music that makes us American and makes us interesting in this way. And he put out this anthology of 84 songs in 1952. And it really sort of took hold in a lot of ways. I think if you listen to Bob Dylan's first two records, you can hear traces of the anthology. You can hear it in a lot of people's music these days. So it's a pretty significant event culturally that most people aren't even aware of. Some more.
This one really helps if you imagine me as a 16-year-old girl. A sexy 16-year-old.
How do you guys as a band make it your own together while agreeing on how it sounds?
Well, I think what really happens is I'm kind of a purist in a lot of ways. I play in a lot of old-time string bands. We like to do kind of that style of music. But what's interesting to me is, like, we get Mikkel in here, and he's playing instruments that weren't recorded back then necessarily. There was, I mean, a lot of washboard, but not too many djembes. And we have Jillian coming in on fiddle, and she's coming from an angle where she's not really familiar with the music. So right off the bat, she's hearing something she's never heard before and making it her own to kind of tie it in together, I guess, would, you know. So it'd be different if she were a traditional fiddle player, you know. So it's kind of fun. What's nice from my aspect is I can throw songs at her that she hasn't heard before, and she's able to come up with something on the spot. So
is that ever frightening for you?
Oh no, it'll probably happen today. So yeah. It's pretty common, actually. So.
And the themes of the music back then, I mean, you know, it's basically sex, death, and religion. You know, the big three.
Very similar to now.
Yeah, right? Very similar to now, but in a much more sort of basic level. And you know, the themes don't change. You know, because those are the themes of life and who we are as human beings, and the stories we tell about ourselves and each other really are based on those themes. You know, love and loss and death and what happens next and who are we together as people. So it's great stuff.
So what kinds of lessons have you guys learned from performing together as a group about music in general or performing?
You never know what's going to move somebody. It's really less about the performance and more about, for me, the evoking the feelings and what you're experiencing together as a group on stage and how you're playing together. It doesn't have to be perfect. You can barely know what you're doing, but if you have that feeling together, people pick up on that. I think human beings are made to sense when something's authentic and real and raw and passionate, and that moves them at some level. So
for me, when you were asking from a performance standpoint, right, I think it's kind of the way Adam described our dynamic, just Adam's guitar and banjo playing coming from a very old-fashioned, you know, purist, minimalist standpoint, Mikkel adding God knows what continent, you know, his inspiration is going to come from on every song. And for me, like, some of the songs are a bit familiar and others are, but they aren't. And for me, just depending on what I feel from the song, it might have a more bluegrass edge, it might have a more simplistic early American old-fashioned edge. It might have a completely, like, it might have a Led Zeppelin edge to it. You know, it just depends on what they start with and what happens in the middle, and then we somehow end together, and every time it's just absolutely fantastic.
So you learn to be flexible.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a good ear follower, I guess. Whatever he throws at me, I try to just do something with it.
Which is perfect, because music should be 80% improv when you're playing live and 20% based on something, you know, which is more of a Carnatic Indian tradition, I think. But, you know, you have to make it spontaneous at some level and respond to what you're feeling that day. The performance you do today is not the performance you did yesterday or that you're going to do tomorrow. There's so much that goes on with the environment and the crowd and how you're feeling. And it all comes together somehow magically.
What about you? Life lessons from performing?
What I like about this group is, and it's kind of sad in one way, but we all have pretty opposite schedules, so we never get a chance to really rehearse together. I work early in the morning and get done in the afternoon, and that's when Jillian's starting. So, and we're all in fairly pretty busy bands, so we never get together on weekends. And so what I like about it is the fact that we get together twice a month, and we sit down, and we kind of, it's kind of what Mikkel is saying, and it's like... And it's like we kind of have this core that we build on, and so it's just kind of fun to see what sticks, you know, and play around and see how songs develop over the course of a month or so, and just that kind of thing, I guess. So
the thing that we do as a group is this is a winter side project for us where we get together on every other Sunday in Minneapolis at the 331 Club and play a couple hours. But it's really a chance for people to come together and just be together. So much of life these days is about being separated from each other and holed up in your own, you know, universe, texting or Facebooking or watching TV or on the computer. And what we're trying to do is create a community of people who come together and can just exist together for a couple hours and create some culture.
That's kind of what a lot of the music that we play, a lot of the artists that were on that anthology, they're definitely coming from where the music was, took more of a role in her social fabric, you know, whether it's through community dances or sing-alongs. I mean, it's just like just about every single artist that recorded on the anthology, they were involved somehow, whether it was African-Americans who were descended from slaves playing at juke joints or old-time musicians playing for square dances, you know,
church
it was
Sunday,
church on Sunday.
For hours, and you just purged your hellish week at the coal mine out of your system, and we're there together with your community members and, you know, finding some sort of relief or whatever. People get together, they come together around music, and it's a release and it's a lift, and you can weep and laugh and enjoy each other's company. And sort of, we can never let go of that as the creatures we are as human beings, you know. And so much of life today is about separation and isolation, and so what we're trying to do is create a community. You know, culture happens when people gather, so we have this awesome event every year in Winona where culture is made, it's created by people coming together around music and game and nature and the beauty and sustenance of the river, and it's just incredible and awesome.
What always strikes me, and I laugh about it.
Centimeter worm.
Thank you, dear. Thank you. God, yeah. Extra protein. Now you got them. What I think is just ironic is we have our social media, and while that's supposed to bring us together, I think sometimes it just pushes us apart from actually doing the face-to-face time.
It's a great way to communicate, you know, and send a message, but it's not a way to relate. So that's a difference. You know, I can send a message, meet me here at 3, or this is happening here. That's communicating something, but it's not relating to somebody. And so the way we relate is physical beings in this world who live on air and water and food, and is to come together and celebrate and play and perform and sing and tell our stories. You know, people are made of time. We're not timeless. Our time is finite and it ends, but the thing that carries the song is song and story. That's the thing that lasts. We tell stories that happened thousands of years ago, and we pass them on to the next generation, and then we return to the earth and we're done. But, you know, it's the singing and the coming together that keeps things going.
What do you guys think about Minnesota in general and the music scene?
This is the most vibrant music scene in the United States, certainly, maybe in North America, maybe in the known universe. There is nothing and nowhere like it. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Not only is the music scene vibrant, and there certainly is a niche here of this acoustic, you know, kind of Appalachian and folk music, but I think Minneapolis, or I should just say the metro area, Minnesota, has so much diversity. I mean, you can be anyone, and you can walk into a bar or a club and you can find something completely different, you know, across the street from where you just were 5 minutes ago. It's really lovely how diverse everybody is and how accepting everybody is as well of this diverse nature of music.
Yeah, and I like that too. And it's not only that, the music we play, but there's also, I like the strength of the immigrant communities in the Twin Cities. And so a lot of different people there are bringing their traditional music. I mean, there's a thriving Ukrainian music scene, Eastern European scene, and it's not always very prevalent, but it's like if you know people that can tell you when these shows are happening. I mean, you just see some beautiful music from around the world without having to leave 15 miles of your house. You know, and so it's, to me, that's the thing I really like about it. I can go hear South Indian music, I can go hear Bulgarian music, I can go hear American folk music, I can go square dancing, you know, I can go hear Irish music down at the pub. I mean, it's, as a music lover, it's a lot of fun, I guess.
Great.
You know you're onto something beautiful in a town when you want to go out on a Monday night and you have to make 7 hard choices about where you're going to go because there's so much going on. Like on a Sunday or a Monday, it's unbelievable. And then you mourn over the fact that, oh, I'm going to go here because I really want to hear this, but I'm going to miss these other 18 awesome things going on. And the culture is just thriving. It's just, it's incredible. It's so rich and deep and powerful and all pervasive. You know, it's amazing.
And you got to think outside the box and want to get outside of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You should celebrate your communities.
Shut the TV off and walk out your door and go meet your neighbors and experience joy.
Well, great. Anything else you guys wanted to add? Are we good?
Now we're going to rock it out here in a little bit here.
Okay, great.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll be resting when the kingdom of heaven.
Thanks a lot, folks.
Thanks for listening to The Live Feed. The Live Feed is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information on tonight's show, visit us at kqal.org.